This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Try and understand your man the best you can. Great song from a great band about the Great Divide. We're going to consider the ancient divisions of Europe and look at whether the Ukraine crisis is actually a sign that Vladimir Putin of Russia is trying to reinstate the divisions of Europe during the Cold War or even earlier. In the age of GPS, is Putin relying on maps from the Napoleonic era? You say it's a must, but who can you trust? For most of us, the Great Divide is the unprecedented income disparities in America that complicate our politics and stifle the economy. We'll do a little GPS analysis of how incomes are shaking out post-recession and see which zip codes actually qualify as being post-recession. We'll also take a look at the ancient tradition of science explainer, from Galileo to Darwin to Carl Sagan to the proliferation of science voices today. Physicist Brian Cox will be with us. And we imagine a planet overpopulated with well-meaning humans and their obsession with adorable, fluffy creatures, endangered species that make us all go, aww. Are the cute pandas and lemurs and koala bears of the world the best contributors to biodiversity? We begin with a $15 billion deal, though, between Russia and Ukraine that leaders of both countries hope buys them time to stem political unrest in the streets of Kiev, Ukraine's capital. Russia will buy $15 billion in Ukrainian debt and offer Ukraine cheaper energy, a lifeline from Russia's Vladimir Putin to Ukraine's Viktor Yanukovych. Our first conversation is with Zbigniew Brzezinski, former national security advisor to President Jimmy Carter, a professor at Johns Hopkins University, and a fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Brzezinski says the big question is whether there are secret deals in this agreement to try and pull Ukraine back from Europe, to try and slow what Brzezinski believes is an inevitable march toward the West, that Vladimir Putin's vision of a reunited Soviet empire ultimately cannot stop.
I don't think it's a futuristic vision. I think it's a nostalgic vision because it is not based on reality. Who wants to be part of an empire after having been independent? Independent statehood is very gratifying and very contagious. And once you have tasted it, you don't want to give it up. So if compulsion was used here to get Yanukovych to concede, I strongly fear that there will be a very, very negative reaction from many Ukrainians, the majority of which wants to move towards Europe, a minority of which seems more comfortable with Russia, but they're not particularly convinced of that either because they know from experience that it really means subordination.
Do you think the Slavic identity question is settled in Europe, even if the question of whether the EU offers more economic security than Russia does is still up in the air?
The Ukrainians, and particularly the younger generation that has grown up under the Ukrainian flag, feel themselves to be Ukrainians. Slav is a kind of a generalized description of several peoples that have certain things in common, including particularly linguistically. But that's like saying that the Italians, the Portuguese, the Spaniards, and so forth all belong to some sort of a Roman nation. It's a cultural fiction to some extent, which the Russians have propagated because it made it easier for them to justify domination of others from Moscow.
Can the troubles in the EU become an argument for Vladimir Putin to at least argue, as he has in the past, that he has the capacity to create a union that is a peer with the EU, sort of a rival of the EU, a set of equals there on the continent?
Well, I don't think they're equal, because if you look at the GNP or at the level of international trade or at comparative standards of living, there's just no comparison between Europe, the member nations of the European Union, and the putative member states of the Eurasian Union. The question is, might there be some secret promises here? And I think the Ukrainian people, who have tasted independence and who have tasted freedom, have a right to demand a full accounting from Yanukovych of what was promised, what was written down, what was signed, and what perhaps was only whispered about. And in other words, the full story of this arrangement has to be exposed. And then people can make a general sort of judgment of how acceptable this is. Theoretically, one could say, fine, if Russia gives Ukraine a big loan and if Russia gives Ukraine energy at a lower price, that's a good thing if Ukraine at the same time can move towards Europe and if in Ukraine's wake, subsequently, Russia also moves towards Europe, because Russia would be far more stable, far more potentially wealthy, and far more secure if it is part of a larger Europe than if it ends up in a kind of fake union between a dynamic and expanding China in the Far East and a much stronger and popularly supported European Union in the West.
Well, you make precisely this sort of Peter the Great argument in your piece in the Financial Times. Is it inevitable that Russia go the European direction? And if so, is Vladimir Putin the only one standing in the way right now?
Well, he certainly is standing in the way, but he has some people supporting him. The former Soviet institutions, the institutions of power, the secret services, the secret police, the armed forces, some of the bureaucracy, some of the oligarchs, and some of the population, particularly the more primitive types, who are swept up by a new sense of nationalism. He has their support, but I think they represent the past. And therefore, my vision of the future is either Russia accommodates the Ukraine moving to the West and then follows suit in some time to come, or it creates some sort of an impediment which will then collapse. Ukraine will leave on its own anyway to the West, and eventually after Putin is gone, Russia will try to recoup, but will lose 5, 10, 15, or maybe even 20 years in the process.
I can't resist this. Were you asked in the course of your government service whether you would live to see the end of the Soviet Union, and did you answer negatively to that question?
I don't think I was asked, but I was sort of expecting it, and towards the end I was predicting it. But I've never claimed to be a prophet. I was always confident, however, that we could help to dismantle the Soviet Union.
Do you think you will live to see this vision that you've just outlined?
It could happen.
All right, Zbigniew Brzezinski, thank you very much.
Good to talk to you. All the best.
Zbigniew Brzezinski is former National Security Advisor to President Jimmy Carter. One more sign that Vladimir Putin may be out of step with the times. President Obama has named two openly gay athletes, tennis icon Billie Jean King and Caitlin Cahill, a hockey player, as delegates at the Winter Olympics in Sochi. It's a direct confrontation to the anti-gay policies in Russia that Putin has not challenged. The Olympics may be another challenge to Putin on an even bigger international stage.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.